SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and Casey just telling me that he's trying to reach Nick, and it should be, let me think, we're a tiny bit, we're actually a couple of minutes early, I guess, for Nick. Case, you know what, there is a window, Mike, you know what you could do, you might be able to swap Welshy for Nick, because Mike has got a, try Welsh now. He's got an 11:30 Zoom thing, but we probably can get him perfectly in here for, 10, 12 minutes. And, then Nick will be ready. Cause I did tell Nick 11:20. I didn't realize that until I just looked. Okay. Yeah. So go for Welsh and tell him, because we know let him know that he's got an 11:30. This is the, this is part of the, part of the chore. Reiterate again, you got Louisiana Downs. I don't want to let that slip by. Louisiana Downs got a nice card, big full fields. Holy cow. Louisiana Cup. So take a look at that. What else am I dealing with here? Well, Casey works on. I gave you those. I gave you the Indiana Manny Esquivel and Rodney Prescott with those stake wins, so that I can retire that. let me also see what else we might have missed. I haven't. Reported much, we talked more about the Ruidoso meet and the quarters than we did anything about the thoroughbred side, but they've got, every weekend they're having a stake, it seems, Saturday and Sunday, the Downs at Albuquerque, and, I saw where Joel Marr a couple of weeks ago won that casino stake. And then last week, a couple more from last week. And then this week, you've got the $200,000. Look that up. The $200,000 Downs at Albuquerque handicap, which, who was it? Was it Henry Dominguez? That every year, who was the horse that Henry Dominguez had that seemed to win that, like, year after year? Henry of Navier. Henry of Navier? Was that it? What was it? Something like that. Mike Welch will be with us in a minute. Who was that? I should look up Dominguez, because it seemed like forever in this race he would have one of those horses that we laugh about, like War Story in the in the Charlestown Classic. Yeah, you can't, a race you can't run without a certain horse. They've got the Manzano tomorrow for 2-year-olds, and then the Downs at Albuquerque. Here you go, and 200,000 mile and an eighth. Deputies Echo, American Dubai, Rodney Richards, Van Gilder. For Steve Asmussen, coming out of Remington, the Governor's Cup. Justin Evans, Articulator, Restrained Vengeance, shipped down to Clark Spencer to run. Val Brinkerhoff, of course, campaigns him. We talked to Val. But Clark Spencer is going to handle him for the stake. Pendleton, Justin Evans, coming out of the 7-furlong prep for this, and Collusionist, out of that same race with Pendleton. Boquilla Island. How about that? Boquilla Island, who's now 8 years old. Wow. Holy cow. Boquilla Island was, that was a Phipps Shug runner. And he's been down there, at Zia and Sunray and Sunland and Albuquerque. Boquilla Island. Wait, I gotta let Shug know that, he's still running. And then top draw 10-1, Miguel Hernandez. There's your field, for the $200,000 Downs at Albuquerque. We got, most of the Ontario stuff in. I told you about, gave you the Salvatore Mile for Sunday at Monmouth. Charlestown's got, handful of, $50,000 stakes tomorrow as well. And, the Joey P at Monmouth tomorrow. So there you go. You're caught up on everything else that's going on. And one thing we wanted to make sure you were caught up on was the availability of the Belmont Clocker Report. And Mike Welch joins us. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Mike, before we do anything else, you were literally the first person we thought of when at 4:30 yesterday morning I got the text. Andy Serling actually sent me the text about Green Mountain, and it really kind of, it just, you know, it was never going to be resurrected, but it's just sad.
Yeah, it's like one of my colleagues here said, it's like having the house you grew up in as a kid, you know, burned down. You know, it's almost that way. I mean, that was one of my first full assignments for the racing forum back there at Green Mountain. Did it for 3 years, the last three before they ceased thoroughbred racing there. And the death knell for thoroughbred racing there was when Saratoga went to Sunday racing, and they couldn't compete with Saratoga on the weekends anymore. But, it's sad to see it. I mean, that film that a couple of kids, college kids, I guess they were, had circulated. They took a video. They walked through the place, spent about a half hour inside the building, and they didn't really know what they were seeing in a way,
no,
because they weren't racing familiar, but I sure did. And to see my old office up on the upper level on the roof, and everything else looking pretty much intact. There were a couple of spotty places in there, but for the most part, the building was fairly well intact at that point. This was not very long ago, so
no.
It was sad news today, and sharing with some of the people I know that were there with me back then. It's tough to read about it and see the pictures.
So this must have been what, the mid-70s essentially, when
74 to 76 were the 3 years.
Wow.
I had just started with the racing form not long before that, and that's where they sent you when you started out. They sent you out in the boonies, and that's where I was. But it certainly was a great assignment for me, having gone to school in New England and being up from New England, and starting out at Rockingham and Suffolk. It wasn't that far to go, but it was certainly a different world being at that place. It was just beautiful. I mean, you look at it, if you ever seen pictures of the track and its setting, it's sort of like a mini Santa Anita. It's in the in the valley of the Green Mountains, and you look around and the mountains are all around you. And it was such a beautiful place to work. The people were great. Everybody kind of knew everybody. Everybody lived within this, few miles of each other. And I know I lived in a trailer park that I rented a trailer from one of the horsemen, and it was right next to the racetrack. And everybody went to the same restaurant after the races, and it was terrific. It was just terrific. And Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon, they filled the place, and the place held, I'm guessing now, I can't remember, maybe 8,000-10,000 people. You couldn't get a hotel room within 20 miles of Green Mountain on Friday nights and Saturday nights during the racing season.
Jesus. I only ever saw the puppies. I only went for greyhound racing. By the time I had come back to this part of the country, and then actually moved from Montreal to Greenwich, and you know, the you'd go for simulcast and to bet some Greyhounds. I mean, that was right when I got here too, because I got here in 90, and I think it was over by 91.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact deal.
91, I think.
They closed it down for the Greyhounds, but they had harness racing up there too, believe at one point. And they showed on this video that the two kids had taken, they were down in the photographer's office, and there still were hundreds and hundreds of old win photos in there of thoroughbreds and harness horses and the Greyhounds. And, you know, I know they definitely showed some thoroughbreds in there. So those are pictures from 40 years ago, over 40 years ago. So, yeah, it's tough to hear, but, you know, I certainly enjoyed my tenure there. The last year I was there, actually, they expanded their season, and I had to go to work at Monmouth Park late summer. I think it was in early, I forget the exact dates, and I used to go every, it was Monmouth, not Garden State, it was Monmouth, and I would drive on Monday morning and drive to Monmouth from Green Mountain, work there all week. I'd leave Saturday after the last race, get up to Green Mountain in time for the final race of the Saturday night card, and be there for the Sunday card, and then head back on Monday morning again. I did it for about 6 weeks, and by the time I was done doing that, my blood pressure was about 200 over 180 from making all those drives through some back roads and you know, missing deers as they ran across in front of the car on the way back, trying to go as fast as I could to get back for that last race at Saturday night at Green Mountain.
Who would people know that were you know, that campaigned there?
Boy, I'm not sure now who people would know. I mean, jockey-wise, there was Jerry Wood, who rode around, and his wife, Sherry Mickle, they rode around New England for a long time and actually had horses at Saratoga, and they trained horses many years later. Probably not. People now would probably recognize too many of the names from back then. It wasn't like the old Rockingham where you had the, you know, some of the racing greats used to go there in the summertime. But we had a bunch of Canadian outfits that would come in for the summer as well. And, you know, who used to run some horses there, though, was Mark Cassie's father. He would bring a few in every once in a while, and then he would take them to the fairs as well. I knew him from back those days around the fairs.
How about that?
And Green Mountain.
Well, and you
and
mentioned
Noel Hickey used to
Noel run. Hickey. Sure.
He ran at the fairs. I can't remember if he ran a horse or two here and there at Green Mountain. He might have. So those are two names that come to mind.
Wow. And you mentioned the French, particularly the French Canadians, that you know, at that time, you also in the fall you would have the thoroughbreds go up to Hippodrome Blue Bonnets, there'd be
Suffolk too in the wintertime. A lot of the French Canadian trainers. I was friends with a whole bunch of those guys. I lived in the same area with a few of them. They even got me playing hockey a little bit, ice hockey. I didn't know how to skate when I got to Boston, but after hanging out with those guys, I learned to skate well enough that I could at least get out on the ice with them. Unfortunately, I'd be going one way, and by the time I stopped and turned around, they'd be coming back the other way. So, but it was fun. It was fun doing it.
It's sad. Whenever I bring this up with you, it's always really tinged with sadness. The fair circuit and now Green Mountain. I just saw a picture. I mean, the building is indeed gutted. They let it. The fire department, I'm reading in the Bennington Banner, they basically didn't want to endanger any firemen, so they just fought it from the exterior.
That's what it looked like from the pictures. But it's too bad. It was years. I was always holding out hope that they would reopen again, and I would just give up all of this and go back to Green Mountain, but not really. But you always had thoughts that someday they might reopen. Not in the last 20 years, but maybe 20 years ago, before I moved down to Florida. There was always that thought in the back of your mind. It was a great place to spend the summer. There was no doubt about it. Good golf courses. We had a terrific intramural softball league there. We used to play in the town leagues, and we used to actually play the jockeys from Saratoga. They actually came to Green Mountain one year. Lafitte Pincai was there. Mike Venezia came over. Yeah. Yeah. And it was supposed to be jockeys against jockeys, but the Green Mountain Jockeys let me play shortstop for them. I was just short enough where they would buy the fact that maybe I was a steeplechase rider.
So there you go.
I got to do that. We used to take the trip over to Saratoga, and I actually had to call charts there one day. Jack Wilson was the chart caller at Saratoga at that time. And he got sick one year on Hopeful Day, and they called me over from Green Mountain, and I made the drive over there and called the races, called the Hopeful, left after the Hopeful. I think it was Jack Kelly that was working for SportsEye at the time. He called the last race for us so I could get back in time for the first race of Green Mountain that night.
Too funny. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was only about an hour and 15-minute drive with no traffic somewhere in there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, and the Sunday, you bring up the Sunday. I mean, we've heard from, not this week, but in the wake of the news, but over the years, Paul Matisse and Chick and Duke have talked. They loved it. I mean, they just, absolutely going
Dave
over
Joseph
to Green
too. I mean, his family, yep. They used to go yep. up to Green Mountain and to the fairs. And his father, I know, was a big racing fan. And I think he used to take Dave when he was a lad, up to, he's probably spent some time at Green Mountain. You know who was there that you would know is, or she was Virginia Vergara then, but she's now Jeannie Reed. Butch Reed's wife was worked up there. She was
yesterday.
An exercise rider. And,
how about that?
Yeah, was married at the time to a rider up there named Fernando Vergara, and then she was there. She was one of the better softball players on our squad that we would go into town and play. She would pitch for us, and she was pretty
so
good.
So great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Ginny's. Yesterday was Ginny's birthday.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I saw her here last week when they came into town and to win the 2-year-old race over at. I want to say the Schuylerville.
I had Butchie on.
yeah, I know. I'm having a brain freeze here. The day before the Hopeful, but I can't remember the name.
Yeah, for God's sake. Spinaway.
Spinaway, yeah. Spinaway. So I saw her there, and actually I should send her a note. I don't know if she knew that the place... had burnt down last night. I did send a note to Sherry Mickle, who I stay in contact with, who rode there, and she had seen and heard the story, too.
But, yeah, it spread. The news spread.
Anyway, enough down memory lane.
All right. You mentioned, watching the works, and I started the show, and I mentioned that this has always been a lucrative, the post-Saratoga workout reports for Belmont, because Vessi's been keeping tabs, obviously, all summer while everybody was at Saratoga. So there's all the horses that were working, for only him, and then there's all the notes you took at Saratoga. So this is a very key couple of months.
Yeah, Donald and I have plenty of leftover stuff from the Saratoga, the last few weeks at Saratoga. He's over at Keeneland now, starting to collect material for, we're going to have a Keeneland report for when that
nice.
Week opens, so Donald's there. I've been in here for the last week or so, and we'll stay another few days here, and then Vessi and Dave Grenning will pick up the slack when I leave after Monday. I'm heading back to Florida. Finally, it's been 3 months on the road, so
yeah.
I'll be back in Florida next week, and pretty soon I'll be starting to gather material for the Gulfstream Clock report. They open up on a Wednesday this year. I just learned that yesterday. December 2nd will be the opening of the Gulfstream meet. So, the first edition of the report's out, obviously, for Friday, working on Saturday now. And, I was sitting next to Dave Grenning when you were talking to him about the upcoming meet. One of the things he mentioned most notably will be the 2-year-old racing here, because a lot of guys got off to a bit of a late start with their 2-year-olds because of the COVID situation. He thinks the 2-year-old maiden races and then maybe, ultimately the next step up, the A other thens, will be a key part of this Belmont meet. So that'll be a key part of the clock report, obviously.
While we've got you, Mike, too, and I know you got this conference call coming up, but some of the big names post Saratoga, and most notably, you know, watching Dave Greinich talked about Tis the Law, kind of you know, coming back out of Derby a little, you know, a little lower energy level than we're used to seeing from him.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a difference in him right away when the first day I got back here, and he's kind of not progressed much out of that the last 5 or 6 days. He was just a, you know, Robin had all he could do to, you know, keep him on the ground throughout the entire Saratoga meet, going into the Travers, going into the Derby, and you could see the difference. He's just, the race obviously took a lot out of him. That track is not kind to him. Robin and Barkley said that, you know, he's kind of this way when he came back from came out of the race at Churchill last year when he got beat. That was over a sloppy track, obviously, and he had some traffic issues. You know, this year in the Derby, he had no excuse. He got the perfect trip. Authentic was just a better horse that day. But, you know, going a mile and a quarter for the second time in 4 weeks and over a track he's probably not fond of, or obviously not fond of, you know, it's taken a little bit of a toll. And these guys, these horses, you know, we know they're not machines, and no, to ask him to come back again in 4 weeks, and then to run well, if you ran well in the Preakness, and to come back again in another 4 weeks would be a lot to do. So, you know, I think they were kind of leaning against the Preakness anyway. Once it wasn't a Triple Crown bid, and you know, watching him train now the last week, I don't think he's anywhere near being ready to work. I know Dave was heading over there to talk to Barkley and see if he could pin him down to that this morning about when he might think about working him. But, you know, I talked to them a few days ago, and Robin said he'll let us know when he's ready to work. And you can see he's not letting him know that right now. So my guess is they're going to bypass the Preakness, and hopefully, you know, he'll start picking up that energy level and look like the old Tis the Law, and be ready for a big effort in the Breeders' Cup. But like Dave said, you know, Barkley's going to think of the horse first, and if it looks like he's not trending in that direction, then, you know, maybe they'll put him away for the year. He certainly earned every bit of any kind of a rest he gets coming up, and you just look forward to the next season. But, you know, we'll see. I'll see him for a few more days, and then I'm getting out of here. But Dave's eyes, you know, he'll be on the watch every single day. So
nice.
You know, we'll get updates on a regular basis from both of us for a few days, and then from Dave as we continue forward.
Mike, before we let you go, you got a note or two maybe on a baby today. There's that mild turf group where Shug brings back Scarlet Sky. I thought Stidham's horse is coming from Far Hill, so we're not going to get any help there. But how about a note or two from today or tomorrow?
Yeah, Scarlet Sky looks like he's doing well coming out of that race. He's going to be a heavy favorite. You know, the Stidham horse would scare me a little bit just looking at the works there. A lot of these I just haven't seen. You know, Barkley's got Bunker Hill, who's by Warfront, but his works on the turf, if I recall, aren't anything special. You know, again, McLovin for Graham, I haven't seen that one either. So for me, from a betting standpoint, it's a tough race to play because you have two, you know, very prominent-looking horses out of Fair Hill that I just don't know anything about. So when you're playing in the dark like that, I mean, Scarlet Sky will be a, you know, worthy favorite, I'm sure. But, you know, do you want to take a 6-7-5 when you're facing a bunch of unknowns in here? Probably not. Christophe Clemenceau, Space Launch, has been okay, nothing special. And Bill Matsos, I haven't seen a lot of either, Ascending Moon. So it's not a race I'm interested in playing, but Scarlet Sky has done okay since he ran well in that first start.
How about the Pletcher for Eclipse, that Honorable, who stayed in even though the race at Saratoga came off the turf, and then has subsequently worked back at actually that was at the training track, and that was
I haven't seen him.
Yeah, you were gone already.
He had one work.
Yeah,
it was at Saratoga training, and you know, we don't have anybody there now, so
all right.
You know, he is what he is off his form. I can't recall his turf work back on prior to his first start. I think it was just okay. I'd have to go look back at my notes on that. I don't have them in front of me right now.
No problem.
But I knew when I looked over the race quick, it was a race I decided I wasn't going to play. So,
anything for tomorrow from
Let me look real quick. I mean, I am just working on the report now. And again, you know, it's not fair to the, you know, a little bit to the people that buy the report, you know, to
just
talk about
one.
Stuff like this. Yeah, I let me see. I know there's some horses coming up. Let me see what we got here tomorrow. Simovich, I believe, was a workmate of that really good horse, or the, you know, the 3 to 5 Bill Mott horse that disappointed on closing day. And Grave ran really well first time. I, you know, even money, I'd be hard-pressed to bet against in Grave in there, just off the top of my head. But like I said, I haven't gone through this race yet. I'm just getting to work on the report for tomorrow. So.
Well, there's going to be plenty of the maidens in particular that we're getting ready at Saratoga, and there'll be some insight, and you can the usual package, either individual or weekend or season.
Yeah, you know, they've changed the way they're selling the form now. They're selling it in batches of, I think you could still buy the weekend ones and daily ones, but I think they're selling them in batches of 10s or 20s and 40s, which, you know, you use what you use, and then you, if you don't use them all up for this meet, you just carry that over. It gets you, you know, 20 clock reports wherever you want them.
Oh, nice.
They don't have to be all from Belmont. You can use 10 here, 10 when the Keeneland meet opens or whatever. So I wasn't brought into that conversation of the decision to market it that way. But that's what they're doing. So it's a little different on there. I'm not sure when we get the Gulfstream if they will sell a complete Gulfstream meet, or they're going to do it in this fashion when we get to the Gulfstream meet, or same with Keeneland. But apparently they did not do it for this meet. You have to buy, you know, a 20 package, a 40 package, or in the daily ones, it looks like to me. But that's not my expertise, the marketing end of it. I wish they marketed it a little better than they have been, to take the truth, going into the opening day today. But it is what it is, and it seems like business has been good, so we'll just leave it at that.
There you go. Well, Mike, I appreciate it, and I guess I'm not going to see you before you head back to Florida, so ideally over the winter, but thanks for a great summer. Happy, healthy new year, and we'll talk soon.
I appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you next winter down south.
Absolutely. Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch, wherever they've got him, after a long slog away from home for over 3 months, and head back to Florida next week. So, Clocker Report, DRF.com/Clocker. And Mike's right. I shouldn't, people are paying for the info, so it's not nice to, I don't want to poach the opinions. Nick Tamaro going to join us here momentarily. Casey was on the other. He was on two. He said he was on two calls at once. So he's ready for you now. And we'll close out with some opinions from Nick. And I just checked the scratches, and it is a clean. It is a clean card at Belmont today, at least the last five races for the late pick five, which starts with that group with Scarlet Sky. And, you know, the Stidham horse is the other consideration after Shug's favorite, Low Country, for those of you that travel South Carolina, the Low Country. And although it's a Godolphin horse, I'm not sure why they would know Low Country, but 8-1, Carmouche. I thought, from a breeding standpoint, there was a little indication that Low Country could be okay in there. Then into the late pick four, where I'll transfer over the analysis to the website after we get off the air, because I was waiting for the scratches to see to put the ticket together. And Nick Tamaro joins us. Nick, I'm just talking a little bit about opening day here today. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Nice way to start the season. Nice.
Couple of good cards.
Yeah. And haven't gone ahead to look at Sunday yet, but you got anything for today? I was just mentioning, you know, that late pick five. No horses scratched. Only MTOs and AEs have come out of the sequence. Actually, all MTOs. Not even any AEs. So it's clean and green. You got any opinions today?
I liked Windfall Profit in the, I guess, not the feature because the Miners Mark is a stake, but I thought that Windfall Profit ran very well in the maiden score and kind of overcame a sluggish pace that day, but looked like a horse that really had potential. And the thing is, going into that, I think we all assume that cost basis Dovima race was a little on the weaker side, but I thought she ran well and validated that. So we'll see how she stacks up against winners. This is not a particularly tough field. You know, I think Eye of the Soldier is going to be a little overbet. I thought she had a very nice trip last time, good setup, didn't really run all that great. So I thought that you could get a decent enough price with Windfall Profit and still have some upside. Drew really well, too, for that configuration.
You know, I agree. And I used Windfall Profit, Lashara, and Mary's France because you just got to respect, even with the uncertainty of what kind of horses she faced, Mary's France, in in native country, Grand Motion with these first North Americas, the numbers are just gaudy.
Yeah, he's very good, and obviously the longer he's had them, the better. So there's a lot of positives there, and you know, a lot of times we see them fire their best shot off the ship. I remember Colonia winning it in Arlington a couple of years ago and really never ran at that level again. So I think you could definitely be seeing something like that potentially.
Let's turn to the Saturday card, but I do want to mention there's that nightcap, a maiden 40 for state breds. These are always kind of fun and slippery, and there's a couple of horses in Brico and Self-Made that are fairly obvious. I thought Nero's Fiddle outside was a consider. I ended up putting him on top just on price alone. But I tell you, there's also a horse, John Pregman, that Unlikely, who's going to be 30-1. If Unlikely runs back to that last race, and you get Cardenas, so you're getting weight, you're getting 3 to 7 pounds on everybody. And they say don't ride bugs on the grass. But I thought Unlikely was a little interesting at a monster price off that last race. And those maiden 40s to end cards have been pretty squirrely. So anyway, Saturday, let's dive in. And where do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, the Belmont Oaks, I guess we could start there and kind of go through the pick five. The Belmont Oaks is just not much of a race. It looks as if Magic Attitude, if she runs to the races she ran overseas, then she'll be extremely tough to beat. She's just facing a, you know, basically grade three type field at best. And Drew well. I mean, she's not particularly slow. So it looks like there should be pace. I didn't really have any alternative to her. I thought Antoinette ran very well in the Saratoga Oaks, finally put everything together. I'm not going to be surprised if she runs back to that and improves in a way, but it just seemed to me like Magic Attitude would be too much, and it was a pretty clever situation in terms of buying her to get her over for this race, because you're going to have a really easy shot at a grade one off the ship in. So that was my thought. Neige Blanche, I thought, may have needed her last. I remember listening to you and Brad Free talk about that prior to Pacific Classic Day, and both of you liked her. And I didn't really think she ran poorly, but I thought she'd run better. So mile and a quarter, maybe a little bit more up her alley. I don't know. I'm not over the moon with her. And I do think that Antoinette gets maybe a little bit of an upgrade based on the potential pace, but I thought the late pick five sequence was interesting. I think there's two races where you have to use a lot of horses. There are two races where you can single, and there's one race where I'm going to be too deep. So it's very interesting when you look at it that way. Engrave in the sixth looks like a single to me. Second time starter who showed some ability on debut. Calibrate was a very impressive winner for Steve Asmussen. Looks like he's headed for grade one competition. And Engrave put in a nice move around the turn before flattening out a little bit. I think the mile will be right up his alley, and you know, I think the only alternatives are Likeable and Repo Rocks, and you're talking about either of those two because they were wide on a day where the rail seemed like the place to be, but that was also a very slow off-the-turf race. So it's hard to, you know, those of us that want to base some of our opinions at times on track biases have to be careful about discarding them at times, but that seemed like a situation where it's probably a little too easy to give them credit for the races that they ran because it was just a bad race. So I thought Engrave would be very tough, and I think we're going to see, I mean, look, by any measurable standard, Chad Brown had a bad Saratoga meet. I mean, I think winning at 20% at Saratoga for most trainers in the world, you'd pretty much give a limb to do that, but not his barn. I think his horses, especially some of the two-year-olds, especially on the turf, that underperformed at Saratoga are going to run very, very well at Belmont. I think the competition will be a little lesser, and he also generally has this kind of horse that couldn't go a mile on debut, but obviously wants distance. This is the kind of horse that's going to improve. So right. I thought Engrave would be very, very tough.
That starts the pick five. Then the late pick four starts with a seemingly deep group of two-year-old fillies going a mile on the grass. And this has got pedigree to discuss, and you got some with some experience. This is obviously, I'm going to guess, is one of the places you said you want to spread.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it's very difficult to trust Amortization, just assuming that she's going to run well because she was purchased in Europe and is trained by Chad Brown. We've seen that really be about all horses have needed in the past, but she's, you know, seems to be training okay. We'll see the Clocker report later today and see if there's maybe a reason to upgrade her a little bit. There's nothing pedigree-wise other than being by Kingman that would make you want to land there. There are some big pedigrees on the outside. I thought that Island Treasure, who's a half to Windfall Profit, who we were speaking of a few minutes ago, is also a half to Profiteer. Obviously, Hit It Rich was very good on the turf. Kerry Girl is the first foal out of Caroline Thomas, who was a graded stake winner on the turf. And she was by Bit of Whimsy, who was a grade one winner on the turf. This is a Bonner Young turf family that we've seen do very well over the years. And Batia on the outside is by Pioneer of the Nile, who, of course, so are Kerry Girl and Wow in this field. And he's a good turf influence, but you have a turf winning dam. And this filly is a half stellar agent who was third behind Newspaper of Record in the 2018 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. So even Lily Simone is a half division perfect.
Yep.
The distance may be a little bit of a problem, but there's a lot of pedigree on those four horses on the outside. And I think that they're the best alternatives. I don't really know how to handle Frankel at Ascot because I thought Frankel at Ascot was actually going backwards when she hit the rail last time. That being said, this is another barn whose horses are going to run better at Belmont. And really, in large part because they couldn't run any worse than they did at Saratoga. So Frank Ledesket is going to just take heat from the start, from the inside, and that to me is a little bit problematic. So I think that you'll have an opportunity for her to get to the front, but how long she can stay, I think, is a concern. I'm going to be annoyed probably if Amortization just runs away with this race because I'll be deeper than I needed to be, but I think she's just a little difficult to trust all that much.
So who are the A's?
I would say I'm going to use the 6, 9, 10, 12 as A's.
And a B or a C?
I mean, I would back up probably with 1, 4, 7, 11.
Nice. 1, 4, 7, 11. Beautiful. All right. The New York bred allowance going three quarters. And group of seven with the entry. I have not looked at this, actually, and I'm just looking at just the names. Some very familiar names. What are we doing here?
Well, the entry looks very, very tough. I mean, it should be. It's Flash Pack and Barbie's race to lose. She's the control league speed from the inside. Looks like she'll get the lead rather easily. Her entry mate, Blitchton Lady, is also capable. She's a little bit better of the two. So I would say it's probably going to boil down to them. Banker's Daughter on the outside, I thought, was the only alternative. She improved in breaking her maiden most recently and is a horse that seems like she's still got a little bit of upside. But, I mean, for the most part, I think you'll see Flashback and Barbie get a hold of this race at once, and it's just going to be a matter of whether there's any kind of pressure for her in the early stages. So we'll if she runs back to her last few and she has gotten back to her very best since coming back from the layoff, I think she'll just be way too tough.
All right. So the entry there, and that gets us to another state bred, this time second level allowance going the seven furlongs on the widener. And this, there's quite a few familiar names in here. This looks contentious.
Yes, it does. I love Opt. You know, I think that for me, it's just going to be Opt or Maxwell Esquire. I thought Maxwell Esquire was an unlucky loser last time. He got a great ride from Joel Rosario to come up the hedge, but had to pause a little bit in mid-stretch, and that hurt his chances. The 7/8 is obviously going to be no issue. He's a winner at a mile already, and so that's I think something that you want to maintain in terms of you want to keep in consideration. But I thought Opt just had no shot last time. He was way far back. He was trying to run down graded on a, or trying to run down Rinaldi, who of course came back and won the West Point. This competition is just drastically weaker, and I think the 7/8 actually might be ideal in that he can lay back and make one run. It takes everybody a little bit of time to adjust to the turf sprints at Belmont after the season at Saratoga because they're so different. And the 5.5 furlongs that we saw at Saratoga versus the 6 or 7 at Belmont is just a completely different ball game. So we'll see how that plays out in this particular race where it looks like there's plenty of pace, and that should set the table to me for Opt.
How about, I cashed a nice ticket at Saratoga during the summer with Bust and Shout, and I've got some appreciation for that one. This is one that Roddy Valenti still owns and bred actually, and has really been even better turf sprinting than he had been on the dirt.
Yeah, I think that the day that you got the money, that was the day. I don't really see him winning at 7/8. It also looks like a negative face scenario for him. But he's a hard knocking horse. He's going to get a decent enough trip, hopefully, if he doesn't push it too much. Because you have a lot of horses like him and Shiraz drawn outside. Noble Emotion's going to show some speed. It's really going to be a matter of how forwardly placed those horses are. So, it wouldn't shock me, but I would prefer in my own handicapping and betting a horse that's going to be coming from a little bit off of it.
Fair enough. Turns us to the Nightcap, state bred, another one of these state bred maiden 40s. They're always entertaining. What are we doing here?
Yeah, this race is just a disaster on paper. It's in terms of handicapping, it's very, very difficult. Freudian Analyst is a horse that I've liked in the past. Two back, Benji Hernandez lost the iron at the 8th pole in right. trying to get second behind a runaway winner. And then last time, he was just average. You know, he's not much horse. He's a 40 maiden claimer. Now gets a jockey change to John Velasquez, which I thought was a positive move all in all. I think it'll help his chances, obviously, because he's just going to get a more confident ride. He's going to get a slightly more confident trip. With due respect to Benji Hernandez, this is a situation I think where he'll be in a good spot, saving ground from the inside. I thought one interesting horse was Starship Empire, who's a half to three multiple turf winners. The progeny of Mission Impassable don't really do all that well on the turf overall, but this is a horse that's drawn favorably outside. I thought he could soft and pounce a little bit. I thought On the Couch was a horse you kind of had to make a decision on. This is a horse they paid $110,000 for, who worked well at the sale, and then debuted against maiden special weight foes, really didn't do any running, and now drops in for the tag. So Jorge Duarte, who seems to do everything really, really well, is 0-4 with all four of them missing the board, with second-time starters dropping in for tags. So I think you have to use the horse, because I'd hate to be beaten by him, but there are a lot of negatives. I thought you had to use Mommy's Jewel, who cuts back in distance, but was the only one that was on the pace last time that stayed in there till the end when Freedom and Whiskey beat Bricko at a big price. And you have to use Fast Gordon. Linda Rice is 30% with turf sprinters dropping in for tags, 242 ROI. And while he didn't really show much last time, he ran a race that was good enough to win this race. And so I think that's something worth mentioning. Disciplinarian's the other horse you have to use. I think you've got to be 5 or 6 deep here and really would probably end up wanting to have as many backups as possible, because this is the kind of race where I think you're nervous even if you have all.
If Freudian Analyst runs back to that last, he's winning.
Yeah, I mean I didn't think he ran. I mean he got a good Thoroughbred figure. I thought he ran his race all in all. It was a merry-go-round race, so I don't want to hold it against him too much. I thought his race when he was third behind Kid Chocolate was probably one of the better races he's run in his career, given the way the pace unfolded that day. It just depends on what type of measurable figure you want to use. And the thing is, he did come back and validate that with two good efforts at Saratoga before
right.
last time, where I thought he was a little dull. And so you wonder if, you know, for a horse that's being running aggressively, you know, multiple times in a given month, if things might be getting a little dicey in terms of whether he's still going to be at his best.
And I agree about, I'm glad you mentioned Mommy's Jewel for Falcone. And, you know, disciplinarian, kind of running out of chances, no?
Yes, I'm getting very tiresome. Yeah. Yeah, he was a decent enough second last time, but he was sort of second by default. And I think you run into a lot of these types. And you always have a handicap and quandary in terms of handling them versus horses that are lightly raced, like a On the Couch or, you know, Mommy's Jewel, who still have some upside.
It's a nice sequence, and Sunday comes back too. It looks okay. So off to a nice start, and it's been the case the last several years. Saratoga giving way to a good Belmont, and there's a lot to look forward to on the stakes front. We had Dave Grenning earlier to start the show, and Nick here closing it out. Nick, I appreciate it, and good luck this weekend. You got a Woodbine mile opinion before we go?
No, interested in watching it. Want to see how Cheryl Spite stacks up with them. But all in all, I think, you know, I think it's War of Wills race to lose if he runs back to what he's done. When his best is too good for these.
That's what I thought too, actually. And the fact that Cassie, you know, was so direct after winning the Makers, you know, that he said Woodbine Mile, you know, will be next. I mean, he had a clear path to what he wanted to do, you know, next and subsequently. So, I agree. I thought War of Will would prove tough in here. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam 1215. Dave Grenig started us off. Jess Martini on the sales front. Ron Gierkink in Toronto. Scully and Mike Welch. With that tearful reminiscence of Green Mountain. And Nick, to wrap it up. And thanks to Case on the board. And it's been a fast week. Again, happy, healthy New Year. Shana Tova, everybody. And for you and your families. And good luck this weekend. I'll put up the plays. I'm working on it now. And tomorrow, probably do a little cross-country action, and Belmont maybe throw in a Churchill spot play or two as well. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you Monday. Riding down the line, we think there is a soul. We don't know. That soul is hard to find.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.